Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, thank you for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris. Today our special guest is Lance Martin. Lance is broker owner of Coldwell Banker Pioneer Real Estate. He began his career in real estate at 19 and has been involved with mostly the REO side of the business for over 20 years. Lance, welcome to our show.
Thank you once again, Bruce. Appreciate the invite.
What year did you get involved in? Was it in like 92?
Well, in the REO or the general business, I got my license in 87.
Oh, okay.
Actually, I got my license in 86, started selling full-time in 87, and then got into the REO side probably in the early 90s. 92, 93 is when I started kind of taking in that direction.
What's interesting about that to me is that whenever you start your career, your first few years, there's some assumption that this is how it always is. So if you got into it in 86, 87, 87, 88, 89 got progressively better for everyone that bought something.
Yep. And yeah, then the idea of a normal market to me, I mean, you hear that periodically, oh, you know, one day the market will return to normal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 25 years, I don't think I've ever been in a normal market. You know, from 88 to 91 or so, the market was on fire. You know, prices were accelerating, and frankly, real estate was easy, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And then we, you know, things slowed down, and, you know, in the mid-90s, certainly, you know, we did a lot of REO stuff, and no one said that was normal. And then whatever, you know, recovery we had in the early, you know, 2000, 2001, and then things caught on fire, you know, from 2002, I suppose, through, and I don't think that was normal, and God forbid the last 5 years have been normal, 6 years. So I give up on a normal market. I just have no idea what that means.
I think you'd have to be in Oklahoma or something. California bounces between extremes. That's the best way I can describe it.
My family's been in the business forever, and you know, I used to have these conversations with my grandmother, and there was a certain sense of predictability with California real estate. But I think that ended right around the time maybe I got into the business. I don't know. Maybe back in the 50s and 60s or so.
Well, it's interesting. From 74 to 80, prices in California tripled and separated themselves from the national average for the first time. So in 74, we were $3,000. The median price in California is $3,000 from the national number.
Right.
And for whatever reason, we just separated ourselves from the rest of the world, and we became more of a speculative market than a let's just live in it and be satisfied at that. And that changes. You know, like I'm sure when you have people buy homes now, they're probably in it for the long haul with the idea they're going to live in and enjoy it, I would imagine.
Well, I think the mindset's changed to a degree, but I got to tell you, there's a certain number of investors in the marketplace right now, and it wouldn't surprise me if, you know, at some point in the next few years, you know, that pendulum swings and everybody forgets the lessons of, you know, that we saw in the, you know, 2006 and beyond. So I don't know.
Well, I think we can count on that one.
Yeah.
Whether
it's this year or 5 years from now, but I think it's coming.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think if you ask somebody why they were buying a new house to live in 2005, it would have been to make money more often than not, even if they were living in it. In 2012, they would go, you know, I want to stay here. They will end up making money on it. It's just a matter of time for that, I would imagine.
Right.
The REO business, when did it peak this cycle for you?
Well, I don't know. We've been in a long cycle. For us, we started probably in early 2006, which for most people, if they really weren't paying attention, they might have thought the market was still hot because, you know, the market for the most part didn't really peak, you know, median price-wise until June of 2006. But we actually started seeing inventory, not a lot, but we started seeing inventory in early 2006. From a sheer volume standpoint, it peaked in 2008. And frankly, it literally, you can map the peak out and the top of the peak from the day they passed the first foreclosure moratorium in September of 2008. And then ever since then, we've just been kind of drifting a little bit. You know, we still had fairly decent levels of inventory through 2009, and 2010 wasn't real exciting, but, you know, we were still doing quite a bit. frankly, 2011 was a mirror of 2010. And I'm puzzled as to what to make of this year. You know, I frankly, 4 months ago, 5 months ago, thought we were going to start to see some decent numbers as far as new assignments and foreclosures going through the system. And the first 4.5 months have not only have they not proved that, it's proved it wrong, because we've seen the exact opposite. It's been very, very slow as far as new assignments and properties going through the system.
Percentage-wise, from the peak in 2008, where are you in 2012?
My inventory levels are about 15% of where I was in 2008.
Wow.
Maybe 20%, but I think I'm probably adding a few properties that are in some sort of a status that I'll probably never see them again. But certainly down, you know, 80-85% in inventory.
It's a little hard to map out a business plan when you're probably being told to get ramped up for volume. Is that something you've heard on the lender side or whoever you end up talking to?
Well, yeah, and with leaving the clients' names out, you know, prior to our robo-signing scandal, you know, I was sat in a meeting in, I guess it was October or September of 2010, and was basically told, get ready, it's coming. And then I guess whenever that was, October, November of 2010 is when the robo-signing stuff kind of came upon us. And that certainly put a lid on things. That, in theory, is all behind us, you know, with the settlements and the attorney generals getting together, which is one of the reasons I thought, frankly, we were going to see more inventory this year. But so far, you know, for whatever reason, whether it's, you know, Fannie and Freddie and bulk sales, or whether it's, you know, balance sheet management, we still haven't seen it. And frankly, the first quarter, for all intents and purposes, was a write-off for me. I mean, there was so few new properties hitting the marketplace, you know, it might as well have been zero.
When you talk to the sources that you get inventory from, I don't know if surprise would be the right word. They're in a position probably where they're not on the front line as far as making decisions. Were they themselves surprised at the lack of inventory?
You know, I would think so. You'd have to be, because, you know, the asset management companies, I mean, they're kind of in the same position as, you know, myself and others like me on the street. I mean, they've got to gear up with staff and field inspectors and, you know, transaction coordinators. And you've got to, if they're looking at the same data I'm looking at, you know, and I ran a couple numbers. You talk about making a business plan. I ran some numbers before we did the show. And I pulled this off of foreclosure radar, and they're from Bakersfield down to basically the California-Mexico border. There are over 50,000 properties with notice of sales filed, another 38,900 properties with notice of defaults filed, and about 11,500 properties that are actually in REO inventory in one form or another, whether they're on the market or whether they're in a rental program or, you know, being evicted or whatever.
I'm sorry, how many was that? How many are?
About 11,552, actually.
Okay.
That number is, you know, 10 minutes old.
Okay.
But there's another, again, so if you get 11,000 that are in inventory already foreclosed upon, there's another 88,000 that currently have notice of sale or notice of default. So there's eight times as many properties that are behind those. And in my opinion, they're all gonna transfer one form or another. You know, whether they're going short sale, which I think we're going to see a lot of that this year, or whether they ultimately end up as an REO, just given the number of properties that are, you know, in the pipeline right now, you know, there's eight times more, but those numbers haven't changed. You know, you talk about trying to make a business plan. Those numbers have been fairly consistent now for several years, and we just sit back and we just watch those numbers churn and churn and churn. And, you know, what comes out the other end is such a small percentage. Like, real, real difficult to make that business plan. That's for sure.
Loan modifications, what effect have they had on the REO business? And are you now seeing round two? In other words, they did the loan mod, but they didn't make the payment. Are you seeing foreclosures stem from that?
Yeah, I think we are. And I, you know, we do my property management here in the office as well. I really use, you know, we manage a fairly significant number of properties throughout the Inland Empire, so I've got a pretty good sample of landlords to pull from. And I can tell you a dozen stories just from the last 6 months from our landlords who, you know, for whatever reason, maybe they bought the property wrong or they refinanced and took cash out over the years. But they're upside down. They've, you know, attempted to do low mod. Some have been successful. Some have not so much. But I think the frustration level is high. And I mean that in that I think we're going to just see a whole lot of these people that will completely give up, not only on the loan mods. I've had clients that are absolute candidates for short sales, and I know I could get them approved and get a short sale done, but their frustration level with the process is so high, they've given up on that too. So I may be wrong, but I'm convinced we're going to see, at some point, I don't know whether it's going to be this year, but at some point, these properties are going to be forced, unless they're just going to continue to let people stay in these properties forever. They're going to be forced through the REO cycle.
Are you noticing any of your businesses being affected by the large purchaser who's coming in to stock up rentals in the Inland Empire?
Well, not yet, but it's literally the number one priority I have, just from a standpoint of what I'm keeping my eye on and what I'm, you know, lobbying against as a realtor and someone who owns offices in the Inland Empire or California for that matter. Yeah, this bulk sale initiative coupled with the rental restriction, at least as it relates to Southern California, I just think has got to be the worst idea that's come down the pipeline since the first foreclosure moratorium. And I know you and I have had these conversations, and I don't know that we've always completely agreed on, you know, what level of properties should be allowed to come through the system, and, you know, managing the number of properties might be smart. I have normally taken the more draconian position, you know, just let it go, let the chips fall where they may. You know, if things collapse, so be it, we'll work it out. And maybe that's not the best approach, but this bulk sale and rental program, I just think is awful.
Now, when you're referring to the rental program, expound on that, please.
Well, there's a couple pieces to it, but let's tie up the bulk sale and the rental first, and then we can give you some more details on what's going on. The way FHFA is currently, and that's the regulator who basically is overseeing, you know, Fannie, Freddie, and HUD.
Right.
They have this pilot program out, which they are, you know, bundling up properties throughout the country. They're pulling these properties from what they're describing as some hardest hit areas. So, you know, let's bring that home.
Right.
The Empire certainly has been hard hit.
Right.
But there's two additional criteria which makes no sense to me whatsoever. Hardest hit criteria or area. Okay, got that one. Then they're saying areas with high inventory levels. Well, that doesn't apply to us.
No.
We certainly have low inventory levels.
Right.
And then the third criteria is areas with low buyer demand. Well, that's not us either.
No.
Okay? So with two of those three criteria not fitting Southern California, this pilot program decided to target at least a piece of Southern California, Los Angeles Riverside Market. And there's somewhere in the neighborhood of 500 properties that they decided to put into this bulk sale program. Those are going out to large institutional investors, certainly not me. I don't think you have a lot of your folks that are running around with hundreds of millions or half a billion dollars.
No.
Anyway, they're being packaged up, you know, offered to people who have those type of funds, which for the most part are hedge funds and, you know, obviously not your mom and pop investor. And then coupled with that, getting to the rental part of your question, they're restricting what those purchasers can do with those properties after purchase. And the restriction, and there may be other restrictions that I'm not aware of, but the ones that, the way I understand them, one of those restrictions, which is a big deal, is they have to lock those properties into rental stock from anywhere from 3 to 7 years.
Correct.
So they pull them out of the market. You know, investors like your people, your listeners, are for the most part going to be locked out. And they're, you know, to be selfish, you know, realtors and offices like myself will be locked out, escrow, title, termite inspectors, all the rest of that.
Yeah.
Transactions.
Yeah, it's a really poor plan to help the local economy. That's for darn sure.
Well, it is. Well, and then on the rental side, and again, it's too early to say how this has affected the rental side of the market, but now if they're locking these transactions into rental stock, well, you know, obviously they're going to be buying these properties at, you would think, something less than 50 cents on the dollar. Their ability to rent those properties at something less than market, you know, seems apparent. And now you and I are going to be potentially competing with a rental stock in the Inland Empire that was purchased at steep discounts and, frankly, very well may be able to, you know, rent for a percentage or so less than us. And it's just, it frankly just doesn't make sense. I've been following this now since last September when I think it was first proposed. And I hated it then, and I hate it now, and now the program is in place, and it's moving forward. And, you know, I've got a letter here that was a response. It was written by Director DeMarco, and Edward DeMarco, he's the acting director of FHFA. He's the guy who's responsible for, you know, this program. And basically the letter says there's two objectives to this bulk sale rental program. Number one is to, you know, look for alternative dispositions alternative approaches to retail disposition. So in other words, let's find a different way to sell it. For the most part, that cuts us out.
Yep.
That's anybody in the transactional business out, and it also certainly cuts out the small investor. But then the other objective of this program, at least the pilot program, is to assess the investor interest. And you got to figure the investor interest has got to be pretty huge if you're going to be able to purchase these properties at, you know, 40, 50 cents on the dollar. I know your investors will be interested, right?
Yeah, I think. How is it going to be in a bidding process?
Well, the first one's gone through the system, and I really would like to see what's happened behind the scenes. And from what I understood, there was a bidding process in play. You had to meet certain criteria, I believe, even to bid. They're now going through their due diligence, and I believe this first round of properties is in the process, and I don't know whether it's scheduled to close or a bid's going to be awarded, but I think we're within 60 days of either the final disposition of those properties or at least a bid being awarded to one of the investor groups. So,
well, what we've seen as a trustee sale buyer is Wall Street now has backed several companies in our local area to the tune of hundreds of millions of dollars, and they're just buying them for very close to full value for cash. And they're keeping the properties, as my understanding is that the goal is to get to 10,000 properties nationally so you can make it a REIT.
Right.
So to me, that's the bigger threat. You're talking about bulking out, 500 properties in our area.
Right.
I would say they're buying 500 properties a week from trustees.
Just on a one-off basis.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you have a stock of houses personally, you've probably been approached and them willing to buy them.
Yep. Well, but, you know, I don't have as much of a problem with that.
No, I don't either.
If they're buying, although it may kind of, you know, put a damper on those of us sitting down at the courthouse steps looking for those good opportunities. But if they're buying them in that process and they're willing to pay, you know, market value or whatever that happens to be, but they're not restricted to, and they're buying them on a one-off basis, then they can choose to do what they want with them. If they choose to, you know, hold them for a year or whatever, or turn around and try to immediately flip, which would, of course, make sense. But the bigger part of the bulk sale thing that I'm concerned about, I don't really like the bulk sale thing in general. Having said that, if that's what it's going to take to move the inventory, you know, through the process, then, you know, so be it, you know. But the part that to me is the killer is the rental restriction, because it's literally locking those properties off the market for that period of time. And frankly, in my opinion, it means it's just going to be that much longer for our market to recover. It's going to use that artificial word again, where we have been in an artificial marketplace, whether you're a buyer or seller or somebody in the business of transacting real estate, we've been in an artificial market since September of 2008. And we're coming up on that. Now the four-year anniversary of the foreclosure tsunami, which never came. You know, that's when I started expanding my offices. I looked at the numbers in 2008, saw, you know, hundreds of thousands of properties that should have gone through the system, and I started to expand my footprint, figuring that that made good business sense. But frankly, the policymakers weren't looking at my business plan.
Yeah, what made sense in the past all of a sudden didn't happen this time. Are lenders more commonly taking the property back and then renting it to the former occupant owner?
Well, that kind of goes hand in hand with maybe the question we asked earlier as it relates to the rental side And I was tying that rental program more to the bulk sale.
Okay.
Now let's put that aside for a little bit. A few years ago, about 2.5-3 years ago, Fannie and Freddie and others started to, and maybe it was a precursor to the bulk sale rental program. Maybe there was a larger plan in play that maybe is now coming into existence. But yeah, there's been every single property, specifically with Fannie and I'll speak to Fannie for the most part. But every property that goes through Fannie, and if it's occupied, those occupants are being offered a rental agreement, and point blank. I mean, there's no questions asked. And a fairly significant number of those, my personal experience is probably somewhere between 10 and maybe as high as 20% of those occupants are taking those rental agreements. Now, for the last few years, some of those properties have been in the system for a year, comes back into the marketplace and is resold, and I guess the system worked as it was planned. A few of those properties we've actually sold with tenants in them, and I think frankly those have been some pretty good opportunities for a few of those investors, because they basically bought a property prepackaged with a tenant that had been there maybe for years.
Right.
But now what my fear is many of those properties that have been in that rental program, these have already been foreclosed on. Maybe they were foreclosed on a year ago or 2 years ago. They're already in the system. They're rented out. I think those properties almost guaranteed will be pulled out of the stock, so to speak, and then sold on this bulk sale program.
And how are lenders dealing with evictions now? Is that changed?
Not really. I mean, if they're not willing to accept cash for keys, or if they're in a rental program and they're not paying their rent, I think they could move a little quicker as far as the process is concerned, but generally speaking, they're following the law, and they're filing the notices and the unlawful detainer and moving fairly quickly. I mean, I've got some crazy stories of evictions that have gone on for 2.5 years, but those are the exceptions. Though there's some unusual circumstances with those.
What percentage of your overall business now is REO?
It's probably closer to 20.
Okay.
And we had this conversation a year or two ago. Actually, it's really less than that. It's probably 10. And, 2 years ago it was 90. Really the only part of the business I feel I truly can control right now is the property management business. I'm still a big fan, and thank God we went into the property management business years back. And then from a standpoint of my agents, I got to tell you, our focus this year is short sales. I am absolutely... that's where it's at. You've still got a landlord. See, listen to me. I'm not even calling sellers sellers anymore. I'm calling sellers landlords. You still have a seller that still has the ability to make some decision on what to do with that property. The banks do appear to be more willing to, push those short sales through. They're still taking way too long, but, generally speaking, we're seeing more short sale transactional business out there.
All right. And I'm going to cover that with you on the next segment we do, because I knew that'd be true. What about your normal sellers with equity? What percentage of your market is your business is that model? Just seller?
Well, it's small, but it's increasing.
Okay.
Which has been kind of exciting. I'd say we're probably 15% or so.
Okay.
Now most of those equity sellers don't have a lot of equity.
Okay.
And frankly, it's been exciting because we have seen some sellers enter the market recently that were buyers maybe even 2 years ago, and maybe bought it right 2 years ago. And our market, for the most part, values have been flat for the last 2 years. So, we're seeing equity sellers. I mean, not with huge equity, but we're seeing them. And I think that number, honestly, should continue to drift up ever so slowly. Granted, 10 or 15% equity sellers is not.
Yes, good. Not anywhere close to normal, but it's
right.
It's better
right.
than it has been. That's for sure.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, Lance, thank you very much for joining us. This has been Lance Martin. He's the owner of Coldwell Banker. And can you give me a website or a phone number for you, Lance?
Sure. The website is www.cbpre. Those are the initials, Coldwell Banker, Pioneer Real Estate.
Okay.
.com.
Lance, thank you very much.
All right, thank you.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.